The New Warehouse Podcast, hosted by Kevin Lawton, is your source for insights and ideas from the distribution, transportation, and logistics industry. A new episode every Monday morning brings you the latest from industry experts and thought leaders. And now, here's Kevin.
Hi guys, so welcome to the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Lawton. Today I'm very excited for our show because we have our first episode ever of the New Warehouse Podcast. And we have a special guest. As you guys know, the New Warehouse, we're talking about distribution, logistics, transportation. We're talking about the future of those things as well. So today's guest is Bruce Welty. He's the CEO of Quiet Logistics. And he actually deals with robotics as well. So I'm very excited to have him on the show to talk about robotics because I think that's a lot of where our industry is heading in terms of the future. So hi, Bruce. How are you? Welcome to the show today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background in the industry and how you got to kind of where you are now with Quiet Logistics?
Well, I'm kind of a lifer in the industry. I've been at it for my whole career. And I got working in warehouse management systems, which okay. are the software products that run warehouses. And we developed a product and sold it in the 80s and 90s. And sold that company in just around 2000. And then trying to figure out what to do next, we found a company that was for sale, a warehouse management software company. So okay. we acquired that, and we spent some time fixing up the software and the customer base. And so then it's sort of around 2009, which was when we started to see that the e-commerce business was really growing a lot. We decided to actually get into that business. So we built a we built our own sort of fulfillment business around our own software. And just at that time, a company came out with a robot. The company was called Kiva Systems.
Okay.
And they had actually built that company, and I think they started in 2002, and the product was under development for 4 or 5 years, and they came to the market, and we were one of the early customers, so we decided we would use our software and their technology, which included a hardware and software component, and we would actually do fulfillment using the Kiva robots and offer it to anybody that wanted to use it. Our feeling was, you know, fulfillment's generally a hard business. There's just a lot of moving parts.
Definitely.
We thought that this just simplified everything and made our jobs a lot easier. It turned out to be true. And you know, we bought up, I think we got up to 200 robots.
Okay.
Right around that time, we got the building to scale. Our business grew a lot. We were just turning profitable. Amazon came for a tour of our building, Kiva, as their host, and we opened the doors for them, put out the red carpet. It's kind of exciting to have, you know, Amazon there.
Definitely, yeah.
What we didn't realize then was that Amazon was interested in acquiring Kiva, not just acquiring the robots, but acquiring the whole company.
The entire company, yeah.
yeah, they did that, and 16 months later, they told us we couldn't buy any more robots from Kiva, or which now I think they named it Amazon Robotics.
Oh, wow.
So then that put us in a box, and we decided, well, you know, we know how robots work. We know how warehouses work. We know how all these systems work. Why don't we just build our own robot? So we set about doing that, and we created a company called Locus Robotics. Okay. That spun out of Quiet in 2015, and then we ran that. Well, we still have that company. We have two companies, Locus Robotics and our logistics company, Quiet Logistics, which is a fulfillment business. And recently we sold Quiet Logistics off to a new set of investors, the original company, and I actually went with that group, and so now I'm back to running Quiet Logistics as CEO.
And okay. So you were the So you were the co-founder of Quiet Logistics, and then you sold off, and now you're CEO of Quiet Logistics, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I don't have any job with Locus anymore. I was on the board. I was chairman of the board, but I resigned that position because I really couldn't be a customer of Locus and running a customer of Locus and being on the board. That would have just been a conflict of interest.
Definitely, yeah. So what was the so back, I guess, when you started using Kiva and before Amazon, I guess, kind of snatched it away from you, what was the reception in the industry to using robotics? Was there any skepticism or anything like that?
Yeah, there was a lot of skepticism. In fact, I think I was probably the leading skeptic for a long time. I'd heard about Kiva 3 or 4 years before we acquired our first robot, and I just didn't understand how anybody could put a robot in a warehouse. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me, but when I actually saw it, I thought, wow, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
They did a nice job of designing the solution and sort of turned the whole warehouse into a vending machine, so you could effectively push a button and you'd get whatever product you wanted. And, we're typically dealing with warehouses that have 200,000 different SKUs in them. Everything is pickable, and you can kind of imagine the complexity of trying to fulfill an order that just comes in the door. You don't know what that order looks like. You don't know when it's going to arrive.
Yeah, what's the product mix? Yeah.
So it gets kind of difficult to imagine how you can, you can be very creative and clever, but it's when you have that many products and you're moving 10, 20, 30 million units a year, it's just a lot of thinking and a lot of planning and a lot of shuffling. So this made it a lot easier.
Definitely. And you kind of remove some of the human error factor as well from a quality perspective.
Yeah, it was more accurate. It was faster. It wasn't perfect, though. In fact, we came sort of at the end to think that Kiva was not the perfect solution, that there was another sort of opportunity to take it to the next level. And there were a lot of things about Kiva that kind of drove us crazy. As we used it, mm-hmm. we'd be familiar with it, and we started thinking, oh, wouldn't it be nice if it wasn't doing this, or if it didn't do that this way or whatever. And so when we had a chance to build our own robot, we felt like, wow, we know a lot about this. Maybe we can really take this thing up another level.
Definitely. So what's the name of the robot that you guys created?
It's called the Locus Bot. The company's Locus Robotics. We didn't want to brand a whole new thing. We just we just kept Locus.
Okay. So now what differences does that robot have compared to Kiva?
Well, Kiva works, like I said, it works like a vending machine, and it operates in a grid pattern, and every single square on the floor, think like a checkerboard, it either contains a pathway or it contains a pod, and a pod is a movable shelf. So the robot actually goes out into this grid, finds the item that it wants. Actually, it finds the shelf that has the item, and then it picks the shelf up and then navigates back through those. There's sort of like streets and avenues, north, south, east, west navigation, and it brings the product, the pod, to the picker, and then the picker is told which slot to pick out of, and then the robot will return that pod back to an open square in the grid. So it's kind of like a retrieval system. It goes and gets the product, brings it to you, and then returns it back. And that actually was pretty novel. At the time, the robots were able to navigate in this grid. They followed a fiducial, which is a barcode that's in the center of the square. So if you stand in the grid, you see that all of the fiducials line up on this east-west, north-south pattern. So the robot, travels around in right angles.
Okay.
It was actually quite clever. And so all you do is you, you know, when you have an order, is you summon all the different pods that contain items for that order, and you pick them and build the order. The way our system works is much more freeform. We actually don't use pods, so we just use whatever shelving our customers have. And our robots travel around sort of on a, we call it a mission.
Okay.
They start, they drive to the first pick, and then they go to the next pick, and then they return back to the start.
Okay. So they can actually go to like regular racking shelves and pick from there?
Yeah. Yeah, and people do the picking just like with Kiva. You know, people actually put the item, take the item off the shelf and put it in the bin, in the tote.
Okay.
To build the order. So we're not actually using robots to pick items yet.
Gotcha.
We're really just trying to take the walking and the selection out of it. It's so our robots are, they do three things. They do a mapping step, which is to build the space. Then they do navigation, which is to travel from point A to point B. And then they do localization, which is essentially finding themselves in the map. And all that activity is performed using sensors and software and laser lights and things like that. So our robots are much more complicated than the Kiva robots. They're much more capable.
Okay.
They travel freeform. But I, you know, don't like it to sound like we don't have respect for the Kiva team. It's just what happened was, in the 10 years between when they invented their robot and we invented our robot, the world of robotics had improved quite a lot. There were much better sensors. They were much less expensive.
Definitely.
We had much more software available to us. We didn't have to invent everything ourselves. So it's just sort of a next evolution of that sort of model. And, you know, Kiva was working with the state-of-the-art at the time, and we sort of had a 10-year window before we started trying to solve the problem using our robots.
Hmm. Very interesting. So it sounds like the LocustBot is almost like would be a better option if you're going to retrofit an existing warehouse setup, as opposed to Kiva, where it sounds like you need to have some type of dedicated space cleared out and built into the floor almost.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, you know, one of the problems with all warehouse technologies is how do you deploy them in an existing warehouse?
Definitely.
And ours go in much more easily. Kiva requires that you do clear the floor and essentially sort of build the pods and start with a clean slate. But I think it's more than just that. I mean, I think when you do the math with our robot versus Kiva in terms of cost and benefit and usability and risk and all those things, I think that our robot sort of wins hands down over the Kiva model. There's still a lot of companies competing with Kiva models, and mm-hmm. Amazon continues to implement Kiva, but I think that's pretty much just inertia at the moment. I just don't see in the next 5 years that those kinds of systems will be able to compete with ours. I mean, even today, we can provide, with our system, we can provide an equivalent level of service for probably 20 to 25% of the cost and a lot less risk. And it's much safer. I mean, our robots are safe around humans, whereas Kiva robots are so big and heavy that if they bump into you, that, you know, you could get badly hurt. So it's just a much better solution in almost every way you could think of. And that's one of the reasons we built it the way we did, because we kind of said, here's our long list of things we don't like about Kiva, and here are all the things we do. So let's make our robot keep the good things and fix the bad things. So it's not a surprise that it's a much better solution.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you guys had a lot of experience with Kiva, and you got your chance to kind of see the opportunity and make a better option. So what would you say if you know, if a company was looking at the possibility of introducing robotics into their distribution and fulfillment center, how would they go about assessing that need? And like, what on average, I mean, is like how many robots do you think you would need?
Well, I think that fulfillment has become a big business. I think that in general, the objective is to start with an opportunity to actually save yourself some meaningful money. Small warehouses probably won't be able to justify the economies. So I think we look at it sort of like you need 10 to 15 pickers, full time to be able to implement the robots economically. That's actually not a huge warehouse, but, you know, there are a lot of companies out there that have very small staff. So okay. Generally speaking, if that's the case, then we would come in with a team and analyze your volumes and your density and the size of your products and try to figure out. There's a formula we use. We'll tell you how many people you need, how many robots you need. And it's so easy to implement it that all we really have to do is put in a server and a Wi-Fi and map the space with our robots and then turn them on. The hardest part of it all is connecting our system to your WMS, which is not very hard, but that's the hardest part of it. And that is, maybe a 3 to 4 week process.
Okay.
And the mapping piece is the way that works is the robot, we introduce a robot onto the floor that we want to map, and the robot drives around and records what it sees. And then out of that is a raw map, and then we will take that map and clean it up a little bit so that we can mark the areas on the map, for instance, where the robots are not allowed to go. We call those no-go zones.
And, it's a humans only, right?
Yeah. Those might be, just not areas where picking occurs. So
okay.
There's no reason for the robot to go there. But the robot can see, because it, just like anything that can see, it knows what's there. So you have to demarcate sort of the space in which it should be working and the space in which it should not be working. And that process takes a couple of days. It's maybe an hour or two to build the map, depending on how big the space is. But then it takes a little while to just get it all defined and get it loaded up. And then once you have the map, then all the robots share that map. So they all know where they are and they all know where each other is. So it's a pretty powerful tool. And it's just so easy to use. Training is just a matter of a few minutes, really, to use the robots. It's a very self-explanatory kind of activity. You walk up to the robot and it says, I'm looking for this item from this bin in this quantity, and we give you a picture of it and tell you which bin to put it in, so, or which bin to take it out of and which tote to put it in. So it's really quite easy to use, which is helpful in fulfillment when you have a lot of temps.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I work in a distribution center now, and we're about probably almost 40%, 35% temp, so definitely the turnover is higher there, and the training gap is difficult to maintain when you have somebody that's just coming in and may only be there for a little while. So do you have, so would a organization have like a dedicated person that maintains these robots, or what's the maintenance, and kind of is there anything in the background that needs to be maintained from maybe an IT perspective or anything like that?
Well, we have charging systems and we have robots, and there's really not much to do. We delineate on the floor various queuing areas. So there's a a queue for waiting, there's a queue for charging, and there's a queue for unloading and loading. And really, the robots operate on their own. And there's only three parts on the robot that are replaceable: the wheels, the casters, and the batteries. And those only have to be replaced every few years, maybe 3-4 years. And it's something that takes about 15 minutes to replace all three per robot. So there's not much. I mean, the robots are such simple devices.
Yeah, it sounds very simple, yeah.
Yeah, there's not much to do, and you don't need any on-site maintenance. They're so simple. They don't break very often. So, you know, we don't see that there's any requirement for on-site maintenance people.
Yeah, interesting. So, and then what's like the, I guess, the life expectancy of one of the robots?
Well, we're still early in the game. We've only been selling robots for 3 years, and
okay.
We haven't really found yet any useful life limitations. I would expect that the robots will become functionally obsolete, meaning they'll be replaced by a newer robot, a newer Locus robot, before they wear out. Plus the parts, like I said, all the parts are field replaceable, so yeah. They should be able to last quite a long time.
Okay, that's good to know. Now, so, I mean, one of the things, I guess, in the industry out there is that, you know, will automation and robotics kind of decrease the number of jobs available? So, you know, with the robots that you guys are using, are we decreasing headcount or are we keeping headcount the same? Like, how many people do you think there is? Is there a ratio that you guys have for employees to robots to make the whole process work?
Yeah, that's always a difficult question to answer, and everybody wants to know the answer. but, you know, we're working in an industry that's growing, you know, it's already huge, and it's growing at 15 to 25% a year, depending on what country you're in and what industry, what part of the industry, but it's just a very high growth industry. And we're in a very low unemployment area, or phase of economy. So it doesn't feel to me like we're even able to get the number of people we need. And so that problem's already acute. And so this is less about replacing jobs and more about getting the work done with the workers you have available. You know, will that change in the future? Maybe. You know, I've seen a ton of innovation in my career, and rarely do technology does affect jobs, right? There have been many jobs that have been eliminated by technology.
Definitely, yeah.
And I do think this has the potential to eliminate some jobs, but I don't think they're good jobs. I think they're tough, very difficult jobs to fill. And I think mm-hmm. they'll create other jobs that are much better jobs. You know, I just have to sort of plead the fifth on this, because in a way I don't, it's beyond my pay grade to know the answer to that question. Are we okay. eliminating jobs? My job is to try to help people figure out how to pick and pack and ship for less cost and, you know, fast, all that stuff.
More efficiently, yeah.
More efficiently, right?
Yeah.
So really that's the problem I'm trying to solve. And we're part of a big economy, and, you know, I think there's plenty of opportunity in this space. And I don't feel particularly bad about the jobs we're changing or eliminating. So it's a tough question to answer in the context that people always want to know how many, like, I always get the question, how many people do a robot replace? Does a robot replace? And I just don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, because you still need somebody, right? So the robot's retrieving the product, and then you still need somebody to then take that product and, I guess, process the shipment from the robot as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're still having people there to do those types of things. Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely an interesting question, and you know, I think I agree with you. I think it's remains to be seen what the total effect will be. But I think you're right in saying that, you know, it may take away jobs that are less desirable. Like I know, I forget the name of it. I saw a robot online a couple of weeks ago that actually unloads ocean containers. And I know from working in the industry that unloading ocean containers is like one of the worst jobs probably in the warehouse, especially when you're dealing with hand stacked products. It could be hundreds of boxes all day just lifting them off. So I think you're right in saying that, you know, it's going to eliminate some of the jobs that are not so great and probably, you know, create some jobs that are better for humans, and then, you know, have the robots do the jobs that are not so great. So I think it definitely sounds like you have a pretty interesting and great product there. And I'm definitely interested in seeing more about it and seeing how it kind of affects the industry and kind of rolls out to more companies as well. What types of companies, like in terms of product mix and product size, would you say is ideal for your robot? Because I think, you know, if you're looking at a larger product, it's probably not something that the robot can handle, or is that not true?
No, I mean, that's true to some extent. I think what's funny about the industry is that if you think about what e-commerce is all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you live in an apartment, all you have to do is walk in the mailroom, and you look around and you see hundreds and hundreds of boxes, and they're all of a certain size and shape anyway, because people tend to buy things on the web that are easy to ship via FedEx and UPS and the post office.
Yeah, everybody gets scared of high shipping fees, right?
Yeah, if you buy a piece of furniture or something, or a bed or something like that, it's sort of not economical to ship it on UPS or FedEx anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of self-selecting. So the answer to your question is, you know, we're really just in the e-commerce business. We tend to use the robots to pick things that are, you know, like take the example of a car. Here's a little fact most people don't know, but 95% of the parts in an automobile weigh less than 5 pounds. So we're sort of in that side of it. We're shipping stuff that's small and light, or I'd say less than 5 pounds, but that's okay because that's most everything anyway. So
yeah,
we use it now for medical devices. We use it for clothing and accessories and fashion. We use it for toys and auto parts. And, you know, it's just a wide range of customers of the product. There's just so much going through that channel now that does fit well on the robot that, you know, we just have a huge opportunity, a huge market opportunity.
Definitely. Sounds like you guys are involved in a lot of different product mixes and types. And, you know, I think the e-commerce, as you said, like it's, there's definitely so much e-commerce popping up. I mean, where I'm located in like central New Jersey, I mean, the amount of warehouses that are just popping up in distribution centers is mind-blowing. It seems like every week they're breaking ground on a new warehouse and they just get bigger and bigger. I mean, like we have Amazon by us and Wayfair, and they have like within 5 square miles, they probably have almost like 4 million square feet of warehouse space together. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, kind of the future of retail, and has been heading that way for a long time. So, you know, people ordering more things and smaller things, like the simpler things in their life, as you said, I think is huge. And obviously, you know, faster shipping is all the rage. So it sounds like the robots will definitely help you and your company get there to improve your ship times and get your pick more efficient as well, especially from quality perspective too, I think. Is there anything else that you think people should know about robotics when they're starting to try and maybe investigate that as a solution to their fulfillment center?
Well, you know, I'm a sales guy, so you're asking me to say something that would sound something like, oh, you should look at robots. They're great. And, of course, I do believe that. But I can say just from our experience, it does seem to be now very mainstream to use robots, and everybody, we're talking to just about every major corporation in the U.S. and Europe, and to some extent even in Asia. The number of people and the types of clients that are buying these robots are household names now. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, so it's just sort of a better, faster, cheaper way to do something that's, and people that live in this space know it's a very difficult job, you know, to send 30, 40 million orders out of a building a year. And so this just makes it so much easier. And, so I would, you know, obviously encourage everybody to at least take a look at it. Our space is referred to as autonomous mobile robots, and the Kiva systems are called goods demand systems. Those are kind of the industry terms. Mm-hmm. So I think the autonomous mobile robot vendors that are out there, everyone is growing very fast, and the robots keep getting better. And if you haven't actually interacted with one, they're pretty impressive. They seem to be very, very smart.
Not too smart, though, right? They won't take over.
I said they seem to be very, very smart.
Okay.
It's like, you know, artificial intelligence.
Yeah. So your robots now, they focus on picking. So where, like in the future, where do you see other opportunity for robots to be utilized, like in the fulfillment center as well?
Well, we do use it for put away as well, for, you know, inbound processing.
Oh, interesting.
And there's other things we can do with that robot around inventory control tasks and moving products around inside the warehouse, replacing conveyors, things like that. I think that there's a lot of innovation going on in the arms and hands areas, picking items. Using a, I think they call them a grasping system. There's some great vendors that are doing some innovative things there, and I think that that's even a harder problem to solve than the problem we've solved. But I think that, you know, we'll see that coming out in gradually taking a more and more meaningful role in trying to actually mimic what the humans do in the picking process.
Yeah.
There's some innovation on, you know, unloading trailers with robots, big arms that can grasp entire pallets and cases and unload it.
I've seen those, yeah.
Trailer. And I think with all of these, you know, we're still trying to find the sweet spot as far as cost and benefit, making sure that when you're actually... You know, once we get it to work, then you have to ask the question, is it an economical solution? And I think the market's going to go through that process and try to decide, well, is this actually, you know, does it make sense?
Yeah.
And just because you can do it with a robot doesn't necessarily mean it makes sense. So I think that process has to happen too. But we're making great strides in all areas of robotics right now, and I think, you know, I'm bullish on the whole industry. So
okay, definitely. So I guess one question I have is, you know, so I think, you know, for people that run warehouses and warehouse managers, you know, one of the big things is always we talked about headcount and employees, but one of the big things too is space as well. So I mean, it sounds like to me, like, you know, we're talking about the Kiva earlier, like, it sounds like the Kiva, you need kind of more dedicated space, but, like, the Locust spot sounds like it can adapt to the current space you have already. Do you think in the future, as robotics evolves more, do you think it'll end up requiring more space needed, or do you think it'll allow companies to reduce the amount of space they have because there may be a possibility to compact some certain things they have in the warehouse.
Well, there's some innovation happening there. If you walk into a typical Amazon warehouse, historically anyway, and if you go and Google them on the web's site, on the web, you'll see most fulfillment warehouses tend to be, you know, just the first 8 to 10 feet, and there's a lot of space above all the shelves that's open. And the big question was how to use that space. And for people who were users of Kiva, we could never economically use that space because it was so expensive to move the robots up and down on the mezzanines. Mm-hmm. The elevators would be too expensive. The floor of the mezzanine itself would have to be specially engineered to support all that weight. And I know Amazon did some of that in some of its buildings where it has, you know, multiple levels of Kiva. But I don't think that most companies could afford to do that. Amazon can do it because they have, you know, so much capital and tend to be more willing to invest it in things that other people might not be able to justify. But Amazon did it. But now we're finding and we're innovating in Locus with mezzanines that are just standard mezzanines. They're not specially engineered. And we don't actually have to move the robots up and down. We just need to move the totes up and down. So we can use vertical lift conveyors for that. So we're now starting to innovate in ways that we can use, you know, all the 30 or 40 feet clear that you get in these big box warehouses. And I think that will change the game a lot because, you know, most of the big warehouses in the world today, the high clear height warehouses are built for people who ship pallets and cases. And, you know, that's okay because they have forklifts that can reach up into the high bays. But if people are doing the picking, then you can't really use that space. So e-commerce warehouses have never quite been able to figure out how to go vertical in these big boxes. And I think those days are rapidly changing. We're right now at Quiet. In fact, we're going into some real big innovations around vertical space utilization. And I think that will allow us to have densities that are rivaling, you know, the big box pallet case warehouses.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, so it sounds like the kind of the key to maybe utilizing robotics to reduce maybe square footage is to go up, right?
Yeah, we have to, especially as we try to deliver same day, next day, we have to start getting into more, you know, think about the closer you are to the consumer, the more expensive the real estate. So you have to be able to innovate in density.
Definitely. Okay. So if somebody wanted to find out more about Locus Bot and also more about Quiet Logistics, how could they do that?
Well, quietlogistics.com and locusrobotics.com are the websites. And there's plenty of information on there. There's a ton of videos of both businesses. So if you go to YouTube and just type in either company's name, there's just a ton of videos that you can watch and see how Quiet has some videos of Kiva still out there, its usage of Kiva. We also have videos of using Locus, and then Locus has its own set of videos, and all the contact information is on both websites. So, you know, if you want to see us, come visit. Just contact us on the website, and all our doors are open.
Okay, awesome. So, yeah, so when I post this podcast on thenewwarehouse.com, also add some videos as well from the website, and maybe I'll get a chance one day to come and take a tour and check out the robots myself and take some of my own video and post on the website. So thanks, Bruce, so much for joining me today on the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm really happy you could come on. It sounds like you have a great product with Quiet Logistics and the Locust Bot as well. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what the future has in store for robotics and logistics. So thanks so much for coming on. And do you have anything else that you want to add?
No, thanks. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for helping out all the people in the industry. I mean, good luck with your pod. I think it will be helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, we can create a platform to kind of for industry people to kind of share ideas and, you know, give insights on what the future holds for the industry for all of us. So we can all kind of adapt and grow together.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
You've been listening to the New Warehouse Podcast with Kevin Lawton. Subscribe and check us out online at thenewwarehouse.com.